Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, our guest is Anne Poirier. And did I pronounce your name right by any chance?
Pretty close. Yes.
It's pretty Poirier. Close. Yep, Poirier. Yep. Poirier. Yep. I try to make it a little Frenchy. So.
Yes.
We're glad to have you here today. So to talk a little bit about Anne. Anne has a book out and I love the title of it. It's The Body Joyful, My Journey from Self-Loathing to Self-Acceptance. So she's going to be here today to tell us about her book and about her journey. So we are uber excited to have someone here on this topic. It's huge for survivors, the body image issue. Well, women in general, but then if you're a trauma survivor, even more so. So thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me very much. And you're so right that the trauma is linked so closely with eating disorders, obviously depression, but body image is connected as well. And many of the clients that I see have had different types of trauma. You know, there's little T trauma and big T trauma. I look back on my journey and I think as I hear more and more with other women, I had more little T traumas that I created in my mind as much bigger than they were, if that makes any sense. So my brain actually made up stories and created kind of this reality that I was living in, that whether it was partly true, yes, but not fully true. So I created kind of this feeling about myself. I am unworthy. I am unwanted. I have to change the way I look in order for people to like me or people to accept me or all those kind of things. So it's an interesting connection to know that our bodies are so sacred. And sometimes we end up hurting them more ourselves, as well as having them violated and hurt on another side too.
Yeah. So how do you think you got to the point where you thought you were unworthy? How does that happen?
Well, it started, I was adopted at birth at like 4 months old. So I think that there's a kind of, I knew it my whole life, but there's this why didn't my mother want me kind of feeling. I think there's a little bit of a hole that you feel as you're growing up. And with that, I just didn't look like the other kids. You know, I was stocky, is built different. I had different interests. I wasn't getting along. Like I just didn't have friends. And I just started to make up these stories in my head. And then there was a few different circumstances. One was being in a doctor's office and having the doctor tell my mom, you know, you better watch what she eats. She's outside the growth chart. You better be careful. So food changed in the household early for me. I wasn't allowed to have certain things and my brother was allowed to have those. Shopping for school clothes for junior high and not being able to fit into like the normal kid section. And so those are the things that kind of gave my brain proof that I wasn't good enough, that the way my body was, especially, and that's how I continued to beat myself up, was all around my body and my body not being the way it's supposed to be. And it looks different than the other kids. And there must be something wrong with me, if that all makes sense.
And were you bullied or teased by anyone in your family or at school?
Just my brother mostly. And he had a nickname for me and they wouldn't let me play with them, you know, he and his friends. And so they had their little nickname for me, but I didn't get all bullied that much at school. So I kind of dove into being a tomboy, and that I think protected me in elementary school when this was all kind of coming about. And then I had ended up with an eating disorder at 12 years old. So it was before even I became anorexic at 12. So from 12 to 14, I don't remember much of anything other than having therapy and being hospitalized and things like that. So there's little bits of my own story telling myself that I'm not worthy, and then realizing I had to do something about it. And the only thing that, you know, I knew of to do was to stop eating. That was the only thing I knew. And so that's where my journey really started for this, trying to fix myself so I could be somebody different.
Okay. Yeah. So I've been an adoption social worker for a lot of years, and I also have an adoptive daughter. So I've done lots of reading and research. And one of the things that sticks out is when you're placed for adoption, it's the first big injury of your life. It's like a loss. And even though you may not know birth family, you still mourn them, you know, because they're your roots. They're supposed to be your foundation. And so when you don't know your foundation, it's a shaky beginning, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is trauma. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I talk about in the book, right at the very beginning, how, you know, for the first 4 months of my life, I didn't know where I was, right? Cause there's no records of anything, you know, who took care of me or where I was kept or any of that, right? I just have a hospital that I was born at and the little piece of paper that I came with. And that's all until, you know, my parents adopted me and we went from there. But I do believe that there's that hole has always been, you know, it's always been there, kind of a searching or a wanting.
Yeah, absolutely. And so also too, if you don't know what happened those 4 months, we don't know what kind of trauma you were exposed to. Right. You know, right. It could have been domestic violence. It could be anything. We don't know. So you could have been in a burning building and you got rescued. And so you don't know what kind of trauma your body's responded to. So I got a little concerned when you mentioned, you know, it's things I made up in my head, because I don't know if I quite subscribe to that. I think sometimes when we present a certain way or have beliefs, it's stuff that's happened to us that we don't remember, like subconsciously, because we were so little. Is generally what I think happens. You know?
Yeah, I think that in the book, I talk about the voices in my head, and I think how connected I got to the voices in my head that were telling me that I was too fat or, you know, not smart enough and no one's going to want you and all of those things. And so I think that there's all of those, that's what I mean when I say I didn't fabricate it necessarily, but I strengthened it.
Yes. Okay.
I strengthened the thought process. So I strengthened the beliefs. So the beliefs were actually, you know, I think that I felt like they were me, although now I realize they were just beliefs that I had heard or seen, or like you said, may have suffered that I don't remember.
Right. Yeah. So these are, when you say the voices in your head, you mean your thoughts.
Yes. Correct.
Okay. You know, it means psychosis.
No, that's a very good point though. Yes. Cause I name them all. I call them my mini me, you know, but I think they're just, yes, my thoughts, my inner critic, my
the inner critic.
Yeah. You got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The inner critic is pretty famous for creating havoc.
For sure. Yeah.
So do you believe that you've been healing over the past few years? Like, you were anorexic at 12, mm-hmm. and then at 14, what happened?
At 14, I got better enough, you know, to go back to school, and I just kind of transferred my obsession into sport and became a fitness, you know, I went to college for fitness. And so I became a fitness instructor, thinking that that was going to keep me in the right size body and make sure that I would stay on track and that people would accept me in that role. And unfortunately, I believe that there's 30 to 35 years of just kind of exacerbating my own disorder of body dysmorphia and disordered eating. I relapsed twice into eating disorder behavior. And with both of those times, you know, external circumstances, something that a coach said in college that spiraled me back into disordered eating patterns. And then through a divorce, I got spiraled back into, it was the easiest way for me to handle that period of time was to control what I ate and control how I moved my body. And it really wasn't until my body started to break down that I had to step kind of back from my life and take a different perspective of it all. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to write the book. I started to just put down my thoughts and look at my thoughts differently and seek help. You know, I had to reach out and say, hey, I'm not well, I need some help. And so getting some therapy and some medication and then just diving into my own self-help journey. Right. So healing, the book was a huge healing aspect for me.
Yes, I believe that. Yeah. It sounds like your trigger times or your relapses were around rejection or perceived rejection. Mm-hmm. And so now if you perceive that you're being rejected by someone or some situation, how do you cope with it now?
I realize it's not about me, right? So I make sure that I kind of break it apart enough to say, okay, I use the word, this is theirs. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to do with me. And I can choose to believe it's all on me, or I can choose to believe it's not. And how do each one of those make me feel? And if I can choose that this is theirs, it's not mine. And mm-hmm. it allows me for some peace and healing. So by separating.
Good. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that you're saying that, because that's exactly right. You know, Brian Katie is an author. She says something like, that's their business and this is my business. So whatever someone else thinks or says, that's their business. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to own that.
Yes. Yeah. I love Byron Katie and I love her work. Yeah. One of the chapters in the book is called Sandboxes. Mm-hmm. And it was my therapist who actually shared this kind of hypothesis. Well, this analogy, I guess, with me is that I have my own sandboxes and everybody else has theirs. And I can allow people into my sandbox, and I can also say, no, this is my sandbox.
Yeah, so, get the hell out.
Exactly, you got it. And how many times I feel I notice myself jumping into other people's sandboxes, and I'm like, wait a minute, I don't need to be in their sandbox. That's theirs. I will stay here in mine, and if they want me to come hang out in there, I will go, but only if I'm invited, right?
And
only
and they're if I... kind to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. So tell me, or tell the audience a little bit more about your book. Like, when did you publish? Who is it? What inspired you to write it? Was it the eating disorder? Was it being adopted? Were the two connected for you? Was it connected with anxiety? Like, give us more details on who this could be helpful for.
Sure. It really does have to do with body image and our perceptions of ourself. And so when my body started to just break down and I couldn't do the things that I'd always used to cope, right? I had all these numbing mechanisms in place. And when they were kind of stripped away and I had to look at I looked myself differently, but then I found these threads that just went backwards all the way back towards, you know, being adopted and childhood and getting kind of kicked out of kindergarten finger painting and all these little,
what?
I know it's, yes, I get it. My mom, my kindergarten teacher sent a note home, and it was a big joke in our family that, you know, that Anne flunked kindergarten finger painting. So those like little things that once you step back from your life and create kind of a storyline, all of a sudden you get to say, oh, well, it's no wonder I thought that, or it's no, mm-hmm. I know, no wonder I thought that.
There's
and it's
a
no
reason.
Wonder I thought that. Yeah. Yep. There's a reason. And so the book is really about how seeds were planted in my brain for my own triggers of thought. Like these are the experiences that I had that I realized this is what I'm thinking. And these are the words I've put to it. And then how they just got stronger, because once we put that an idea in our head. We look for proof to make sure that we're right. So that continued on.
Right.
And then after realizing that it wasn't my fault, really, right? Mm-hmm. It was everything that was happening. And it was my interpretation of everything that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that I could make some different choices. And I could replant some different thoughts. And I could take a look at myself differently. And what does that look like? And how do I do that? And so the book is really about my journey from really disliking myself and towards a place of appreciation, acceptance, and respect of not only my body, but myself along the journey. And at the end of each chapter, there's a step back question. So people can kind of check in with themselves and say, let me step back away from what I just read. And where does that line up for me in my life? And what might have been some of the seeds that were planted in my head for belief systems around whether it's food or body or money, right? Or success or working, work ethic, all of those kind of things. It can be all kinds of different things that we can believe certain things about. And it was, so the book is rounding out in that way and how I healed myself, but also had a lot of help along the way to make it to this other side where I can really see, I have a completely different perspective on my body, on food, on exercise, on self-care, right? And and have a new maxi me in my head that helps me. She's more compassionate, she's stronger, she's more empathetic. So she, you know, she takes over when mini me comes knocking on my door. So and those are some of the words and kind of the way I've written the book is to lay it out so that people can realize they're not alone when they have some of these thoughts and why we get them and how we can change them.
Right. So my next question is about the mini me when she was five, you know, because sure. It's funny to adults, maybe, you know, I mean, I know your family made a joke out of it and that's what families do. I won't say the family was evil or anything. But 5-year-old little girls are pretty vulnerable. That sounds like it might've been pretty hurtful. And so any work around, you know, talking to her or showing her compassion in the therapy that you've done?
Absolutely. You know, understanding and seeing her as where she was and what she would have needed in that time. And it's of no fault. You know, I don't blame anybody or anything, but to be okay. And to anytime I have emotions that connect with not doing something right? Not being right or being wrong or being pointed out or those kind of things, I pause and I notice my emotional kind of trigger and I allow myself to feel that trigger. I allow myself to feel the emotion and try to soothe myself, right? With some self-soothing and self-compassion around all of that. And it does come from, and I can talk to the messy, you know, that messy seed in my head and the clumsy seed in my head that now that I've kind of identified them and told them they were helpful and that it wasn't none of it was bad or wrong. It was just part of my story. Mm-hmm. And I honestly believe my past has kind of led me to my purpose, you know, where I'm headed now and how I'm trying to, I think, understand. I just posted something today about how we talk to our kids, right? About using language that's inclusive and using language that food isn't good or bad and exercise isn't good or bad. And just noticing how we can shift the way we see ourselves so we can role model for our kids in a different way, you know? And I have two daughters, so I think about the impact of females as they grow up in a society full of social media and diet culture and, you know, the way society, I call it society's thin ideal, you know, that your ideal body should be a certain way and really trying to fight against that right now.
Right. Now, did your eating disorders were they connected at all with perfectionistic thinking?
Oh, I'm sure they were. Always trying to be the best person, do the best, make sure everybody was proud of me. There was a real wanting to make my parents proud, to make sure that it was a good choice, mm-hmm. to pick me maybe, or to have me as their daughter, right?
Right,
so a lot of proving, and I think that making sure I'm as perfect as I can be, and that is a big part of the actual beginning of the eating disorder, was trying to look the part, because I did it.
A lot of pressure. Okay, and are you healthy now in terms of physical, any damage from the eating disorder?
No. And I've done all kinds of, you know, the appropriate scans and things to make sure that my body is doing okay and, mm-hmm. and working okay. And so I thank goodness for that. I did have a knee replacement a little early, you know, mm-hmm. young for that, just due to the pounding of my body. And, but that's, you know, that was as a result, I believe, of a lot of different factors. Mm-hmm. So, but it's better now, and I move for joy. I ask my mm-hmm. body what it needs. I talk to myself. I cry if I need to cry, you know, I allow all my emotional spaces to be seen and heard. Because I think that's another part of all of this is to.
It really is allowing ourselves to feel, especially when there's a lot of hurt, pain, emptiness. It's really challenging for people. And that's why, you know, the drug epidemic is, you know, and alcohol, because people have a really hard time sitting. You know, it's why we overeat or overdrink or not eat, or, you know,
yes,
lots of stuff, gambling, everything. Yes. And so how did you learn how to sit with those emotions? And you mentioned soothing, like, and you said compassion, but what kind of soothing did you do? Like, were you petting a cat? Were you like hugging yourself? Like, what did you do?
A blanket. And okay. I have a little stuffed animal back there. Her name is Izzy. And so we talk. I don't have an animal, but it's staying warm and using the senses of touch for myself. Mm-hmm. So it's just cuddling in a blanket, a warm blanket, maybe having a cup of hot chocolate or coffee where it's warm, so it's comforting. Journaling. I did a lot of journaling, just journaling out emotions, allowing my brain to just go without trying very hard not to be judgmental about anything that I felt. And mm-hmm. that's part of one of the hardest things for not only our children, but for us as adults, to realize that you're allowed to have any emotion that you have. It's not right or wrong. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes, you know, don't cry, or, you know, you shouldn't get mad, or those, and we've been taught those kind of things where we get to say, wait a minute, isn't that the best thing I can do, is to actually feel mm-hmm. What's going on, and ask myself what's happening. And I have a little self-care toolbox, which is all the things that I love that make me feel good, make me happy, make me smile, you know, allow myself some space and time mm-hmm. to utilize those or step away. And sometimes it's been known to be happening in a bathroom stall, where I go in a bathroom stall and I take some deep breaths and I allow myself to just be there and disconnect from the things that I might be, you know, taking on as mine that I don't need to be taking on, you know, because a lot of times you're not in the space to give yourself the compassion and love that you might need. If somebody says something to you and you're at work, I've been known to go into the bathroom and breathe and allow myself to feel for a minute, and then try to disconnect from whatever the person said from me, you know. Mm-hmm. I may have made a mistake, but it's I'm not a mistake.
That's right. I like that. Yeah. What is your work related at all to your healing journey, or no, is it something separate?
Yes, it is. It is working with women to feel more comfortable and confident in their bodies.
Okay.
So, you know,
what do you do for a living then?
I'm a coach. Yes. Okay. I'm a lifestyle coach, intuitive eating coach, and body image coach. So
okay, awesome.
I kind of work all around to that. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Okay. And then another question I have is, other than your own book, are there other books that were super helpful to you on your healing journey?
Oh, absolutely. Health at Every Size by Lindo Bacon changed the way I saw food and eating and diets. And mm-hmm. I was wondering why didn't somebody share this with me a long time ago? Because it would have saved a lot of hurt and pain. Mm-hmm. So Health at Every Size, Intuitive Eating was a great book, Body Kindness, Rebecca Scritchfield. And then the one that I'm reading now is More Than a Body by Lexi and Lindsay Kite, which is a very interesting read too. So there are some great books that helped me along my journey. Another one is Maybe You Should Talk to Someone.
Oh yeah. That one I've read.
Yeah.
And I think I've read Intuitive Eating, but really long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So those have been really helpful for me.
Yeah. Okay. And where, if people want to purchase your book, or I think you mentioned a download, can you say something about that?
Sure. Anybody who wants to read the book, I'm offering a free digital download for anybody. They just write me at Anne@thebodyjoyful.com, and I will send out a digital copy. If you want the hard copy, you can get it anywhere books are sold. So. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's very generous. I really appreciate you offering that to people. I would love a copy as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think the goal of it is so that people don't feel alone. And so that's why I wrote it, mm-hmm. to help, I don't know, others, just to feel that they can do this too. They can, mm-hmm. they can move through this kind of a journey if they are not feeling good about themselves. And boy, with bodies today, it's very difficult to, we're all different, and that's the way it's supposed to be. And how mm-hmm. can we see ourselves the way our best friend sees us, right?
Right.
Versus criticizing ourselves every time we look in the mirror. So,
well, if criticizing ourselves helped, that'd be one thing, but we know it actually is destructive and not so helpful. So.
Yes, exactly.
That's my argument for why it's important to have more compassion for ourselves, because mm-hmm. that's what works towards change. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I ask sometimes, you know, so how is that working for you? Mm-hmm. You know, the beating self up kind mm-hmm. of conversation that we have in our head. And
yeah.
I go, didn't help me out much. So shifting that has made all the difference for me.
Right. Yeah. Now, if someone in our audience would like to work with you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
The same way, probably, Anne@thebodyjoyful.com. Yes, that's the best way to reach me. So,
okay. And what kind of programs and services do you offer your clients?
Well, I have a free Facebook group called The Body Joyful Revolution, and it's a private group, and it is really for women. It's a women-only group, but it's for women who want to feel more comfortable and confident in their bodies without stepping away from diet culture and having a different conversation, especially this time of year. But we've been around for a year now. There's over 400 members in it, and that's what we talk about. We talk about, you know, body image and body confidence and self-talk and all of those things, because it's not just about food. It's about all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I have that. And then on top of that, I have the Body Joyful Solution, which is a 6-month private coaching program that I work one-on-one with people. So, and excellent. That's when we do the deep dive. So yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one other thing that I have done in the past, but COVID kind of put a little wrench into it for now, is a VIP weekend. So I've had some people come here for a weekend. They stay in Maine. I'm on the coast of Maine, and they stay here, and we dive in one-on-one with a real intensive weekend. And that can be pretty life-changing too. So those are the ways that I work with people.
Very cool. Yes. Yeah, so both Anne and I are from the state of Maine. So mm-hmm. Mainards, New Englanders in the house.
Yes.
And which coast are you on? I was like Northeast.
I am down at Old Orchard Beach. So,
Old Orchard Beach. Okay.
So yeah,
more fun
south. Yeah.
There's potato fields where I'm from, you know, not just the beach.
Yeah. It's Maine is a big state and it's got all kinds of things in it. So that's what's beautiful about it though. So
like, I imagine you're waiting for the pandemic to get behind us before the VIP days again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. At least
people are going to really need them at that point.
I know for sure.
Really important. Yeah. So before we wrap up, are there any last words of wisdom or inspiration for our audience that you have?
Well, I think one of my favorite quotes is from Viktor Frankl. Mm-hmm. And it's between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is where I'm paraphrasing, is where we get our growth. But I always think about when I have a feeling that happens due to a stimulus, which could be somebody saying something. It could be a tone of voice. It could be a word. It could be a phone call. It could be anything, even something seen on TV, noticing it in my body. And then instead of going directly to the response that I would normally have, to take a breath and try to widen that space so I can see it for what it truly is, or change the perspective, or see a series of perspectives so I don't respond the way I've always responded. So that's one of my favorite quotes, and a way to think about when we turn to things that don't necessarily serve us, whether it's the voices in our head, meaning the thoughts, mm-hmm. or not eating, or eating, or alcohol, or drugs, or gambling, or any of those things, to pause and ask yourself what you need. What do I need in this moment? Care, a hug, a shower, right?
Yeah. So good stuff. Yeah. I love Viktor Frankl's book. I love it. It is my most favorite book. It's very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm,
you know, I was shocked how powerful that book was. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That is, there are so many great books, and if we can take the time to really read them and then take them in,
mm-hmm.
and not that just, and I have to go back to a lot of my books here and there to remember the lessons that they taught.
So, right. Yeah. Well, all right, Miss Anne, it's been such an honor to have you here, sharing your wisdom and insights with our audience. I know the women are going to really appreciate your message. And so thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Greatly appreciate all that you do.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, healthrivedream.com.